Imagine a world where children fight humanity's wars, where the fate of our species rests on the shoulders of a brilliant but tormented 6-year-old boy. This is the reality Orson Scott Card created in Ender's Game, a science fiction masterpiece that has captivated readers since its publication in 1985. The novel, which began as a short story in 1977, went on to win both the Hugo and Nebula Awards, science fiction's highest honors. Its cultural impact extends far beyond the page. The book has been adopted by military academies for leadership training, studied in college courses on ethics and strategy, and remains a staple on high school reading lists. Even Elon Musk has cited it as one of his favorite childhood books, claiming it shaped his thinking about technology and humanity's future. What makes this tale of child soldiers and interstellar warfare so enduring? Perhaps it's because beneath its science fiction veneer lies a profound exploration of empathy, isolation, and the moral complexities of violence, themes that resonate as powerfully today as when Card first conceived them. Andrew Ender Wiggins' journey begins with pain, the removal of a monitoring device that had been attached to his neck for years. As a third child in a society that strictly limits families to 2 offspring, Ender's very existence required special government permission. His monitor removal signifies rejection, marking him as a failure in whatever test the military had been conducting through the device. The consequences are immediate. At school, a boy named Stilsing and his friends corner Ender, taunting him about being a third and his lost monitor. When they attack, Ender responds with shocking, calculated violence. He doesn't just defend himself, he deliberately beats Stilsing severely even after knocking him down, coldly explaining to the others that this excessive force is meant to prevent future attacks. Walking away, he privately weeps, haunted by the realization, "I am just like Peter. Take my monitor away, and I am just like Peter." This opening scene establishes the central tension of Ender's character, his capacity for ruthless violence coupled with his deep fear of becoming like his sadistic older brother, Peter. We see immediately that Ender isn't just a gifted child, he's a strategist who understands that sometimes cruelty serves a purpose. Yet unlike Peter, who enjoys inflicting pain, Ender is tormented by his own capacity for brutality. The military officials monitoring Ender recognize this combination as valuable. Colonel Graf, director of the battle school, arrives at the Wiggin home to recruit Ender, explaining that removing his monitor was the final test. Despite his parents' objections about Ender hospitalizing Stilsing, Graf is impressed by Ender's reasoning. He didn't just win that fight, he won all future fights by establishing himself as someone not to be trifled with. In a private conversation, Graf reveals the truth about Ender's family. Peter wasn't accepted into battle school precisely because of his sadism, while Valentine, Ender's beloved sister, was too gentle. Ender was requisitioned to be half Peter and half Valentine, combining Peter's strategic brilliance and capacity for violence with Valentine's empathy and moral center. When Graf explains that humanity needs someone like Ender to save them from the alien buggers, Ender makes his first critical choice. "It's what I was born for." This decision, made by a 6-year-old, sets in motion a transformation from child to warrior that will ultimately determine the fate of 2 species. "I'm going to isolate him enough that he remains creative, otherwise he'll adopt the system here and we'll lose him." These words from Colonel Graf reveal the deliberate strategy behind Ender's training. From the moment he boards the shuttle to battle school, Ender is systematically cut off from normal human connection. On the ship, Graf publicly singles him out, praising him as the only boy who truly understands how to think in zero gravity. This special treatment immediately makes Ender a target among his peers. When a boy attacks him from behind, Ender defends himself by grabbing the attacker's arm. In zero gravity, this sends the boy flying into a bulkhead, breaking his arm. Rather than mitigating the incident, Graf uses it to further isolate Ender, warning the others not to mess with him. As they dock at battle school, a devastated Ender confronts Graf about this betrayal of their budding friendship. Graf coldly explains his job isn't to make friends, but to produce the best soldiers in the world. At battle school, Ender quickly adapts to the rigid schedule of classes and games, but finds himself the target of Bernard, the boy whose arm he broke. Bernard establishes himself as the dormitory's ruler, recruiting followers and targeting Ender with constant harassment. Rather than responding with physical force, Ender fights back through intelligence, hacking the messaging system to send anonymous messages that mock Bernard, eventually destroying his authority without violence. This pattern repeats throughout Ender's training. Just as he begins to form connections, first with his launch group, later with soldiers in various armies, the teachers intervene to separate him. When he's transferred to Salamander Army under the cruel Bonzo Madrid, he's forbidden from training with his unit. When he forms a practice group with younger students, new rules are created to prevent cross-army cooperation. Even his most meaningful friendship with a boy named Ally is eventually sacrificed to this strategy. Their bond, sealed with Ally's whispered salam, peace, becomes another casualty of the system that forces them into competing armies. Ender realizes that despite their physical separation, Ally remains part of him through memory, a connection that can't be severed. Yet he mourns that their friendship may never recover, as their separate paths force them to become strangers. The military's isolation strategy works precisely because it's so painful. By denying Ender normal human connections, they force him to develop extraordinary self-reliance and creative problem-solving. But the psychological cost is immense, creating a commander who can brilliantly anticipate enemy movements while struggling to understand his own humanity. The enemy's gate is down. This simple reorientation becomes Ender's mantra, encapsulating his approach to both the battle room and life itself. In the zero-gravity combat simulator at the heart of battle school, traditional concepts of up and down become meaningless. While other students cling to earth-based orientation, Ender immediately recognizes that perspective is everything. The battle room serves as both the novel's most innovative concept and its central metaphor. Here, armies of children engage in mock combat using freeze guns that temporarily immobilize limbs when hit. The room contains large stars, floating obstacles that provide both cover and tactical opportunities. Success requires not just physical skill, but complete mental flexibility. Ender's first experience in the battle room reveals his natural aptitude. While other new students, called launchies, cling nervously to handholds, Ender pushes off to experiment with movement. He tumbles chaotically at first, but quickly adapts his thinking, reframing the experience from flying to falling, from walls to floors. Through trial and error, he discovers how to control his rebounds using his legs, developing techniques that more experienced students haven't mastered. This physical reorientation parallels Ender's cognitive approach to all problems. Where others see fixed rules, he sees possibilities. When transferred to Salamander Army under Commander Bonzo Madrid, Ender is ordered to remain inactive during battles. Instead of accepting this limitation, he studies Bonzo's rigid formations from the sidelines, identifying weaknesses that he'll later exploit as a commander. Similarly, when forbidden from training with his own army, Ender creates unauthorized practice sessions with younger students, teaching them advanced techniques while gaining valuable leadership experience. When rules change to prevent these sessions, he adapts again, finding new ways to prepare his soldiers. The battle room also serves as the arena where Ender's tactical genius fully emerges. As commander of Dragon Army, he abandons standard formations in favor of flexible toon deployments. He creates 5 toons instead of the traditional 4, trains them for independent action rather than mass movements, and develops innovative tactics like the feet-first attack position that minimizes target area. Most importantly, Ender teaches his soldiers to think differently. The enemy's gate is down becomes more than a spatial orientation. It's a philosophy that focuses on objectives rather than conventions. This approach leads Dragon Army to unprecedented success, winning battles against impossible odds and against multiple armies simultaneously. The battle room sequences showcase Card's understanding that future warfare will require mental flexibility more than physical strength. Through Ender's innovations, we see that the most dangerous weapon isn't the freeze gun, but the mind that wields it. A lesson that will prove devastatingly true when simulation becomes reality.
I don't care if I pass your test. I don't care if I follow your rules. If you can cheat, so can I. I won't let you beat me unfairly. I'll beat you unfairly first. As Ender rises through the ranks of Battle School, the burden of leadership transforms him. When he's given command of Dragon Army, a name historically associated with failure, he faces his greatest challenge yet. His soldiers are untrained, many underage, and he has less time to prepare them than any commander before him. Ender's approach to command reveals both his brilliance and his growing isolation. He identifies Bean, the smallest soldier, as exceptionally intelligent, but deliberately uses him as a target for criticism, creating distance between them while pushing Bean to excel. Ender recognizes he's employing the same isolation tactics Graf used on him, creating struggle to forge a better soldier. This realization disgusts him, yet he continues because it works. The pressure intensifies as the teachers subject Dragon Army to an unprecedented battle schedule, sometimes multiple battles per day against increasingly unfair odds. Despite exhaustion and injuries, Ender's innovative tactics lead to victory after victory. He creates shield pairs, where one frozen soldier protects an active shooter. He develops Bean's special squad, using nearly invisible deadline cords to change direction rapidly in zero gravity. He trains his soldiers to think independently rather than rely on his commands. These victories come at tremendous personal cost. Ender becomes both admired and hated. Some commanders seek his advice, while others harass him in corridors. The pressure to maintain his undefeated record weighs heavily, especially when he realizes the teachers are deliberately trying to break him. In a rare moment of vulnerability with Bean, Ender admits his fears about the teacher's intentions and confesses he can't lose any battles. The culmination of this pressure comes in the confrontation with Bonzo Madrid. After Ender deliberately insults Bonzo by leaving before accepting surrender, the Spanish commander's hatred reaches dangerous levels. When Bonzo and six others corner Ender in the shower, intending serious harm, Ender fights back with the same calculated brutality he showed against Stilson. Using the slipperiness of his soapy body and battle room honed reflexes, he delivers a devastating kick that leaves Bonzo unconscious. Only later does Ender learn that both Bonzo and Stilson died from their injuries, making him a killer twice over before his 11th birthday. This knowledge devastates him, despite the military's insistence that he acted in self-defense. "I didn't want to hurt him," he cries, haunted by the empty look in Bonzo's eyes. The weight of command has forced Ender to become precisely what he feared, someone capable of Peter's violence, even as he maintains Valentine's empathy. This combination makes him the perfect military leader, but fractures his sense of self. As he graduates to command school, Ender carries not just his tactical brilliance, but the psychological wounds of having been shaped into a weapon. While Ender battles in space, a parallel story unfolds on Earth between his siblings. Peter, the eldest, embodies brilliant ruthlessness, a boy who tortures small animals and once threatened to kill both Ender and Valentine. Valentine, the middle child, represents compassion and moral clarity. Together with Ender, they form a psychological triptych representing different aspects of human nature. Early in the novel, Peter forces Ender to play buggers and astronauts, making Ender wear the bugger mask while Peter becomes increasingly violent. Valentine intervenes, threatening to expose Peter if anything happens to either of them. This dynamic, Peter's cruelty, Valentine's protection, Ender caught between, establishes the pattern that will shape all three children. What makes this sibling relationship extraordinary is that all three Wigan children possess genius-level intelligence. When the military rejects Peter for battle school because of his sadism and passes over Valentine for being too gentle, their paths diverge from Ender's, but their brilliance finds other outlets. Peter convinces Valentine to help him gain access to global communication networks, where they create pseudonyms, Peter as Locke and Valentine as Demosthenes, to influence world politics. Peter strategically positions Valentine's Demosthenes as an anti-Russian warmonger, while his, Locke, takes moderate positions. Their columns gain traction, eventually getting syndicated in regional news nets, with their father ironically praising Demosthenes' viewpoints without knowing his daughter writes them. This subplot reveals how the same exceptional qualities that make Ender a military genius manifest differently in his siblings. Peter channels his strategic thinking into political manipulation, while Valentine uses her empathy and communication skills to articulate ideas that resonate with readers. Together, they shape Earth's political landscape even as children. The sibling dynamic reaches its emotional peak when Valentine visits Ender at a lakeside retreat after his graduation from battle school. She delivers the ultimatum that convinces him to continue his training. If you try and lose, then it isn't your fault. But if you don't try and we lose, then it's all your fault. You killed us all. In this moment, Valentine uses her deep understanding of Ender to manipulate him, showing that she, too, possesses some of Peter's calculating nature. Ender's confession during this meeting reveals the psychological core of the sibling relationship. His deepest desire regarding Peter isn't to defeat him, but to be loved by him. This longing for connection, even with someone who has hurt him, illustrates how family bonds shape identity even across interstellar distances. By the novel's end, all three siblings have changed their world. Ender by winning the bugger war, Peter by becoming hegemon, world leader, and Valentine by documenting their history. Their collective impact demonstrates Card's thesis that exceptional children, given the right circumstances, can reshape civilization itself. Throughout Battle School, Ender plays a computer game designed to analyze students psychologically. This mind game begins with simple challenges, but evolves into a surreal landscape that reflects Ender's subconscious fears and desires. The game becomes a psychological mirror, revealing truths about Ender that even he doesn't fully understand. In one recurring scenario, Ender confronts a giant who presents two glasses of liquid, one poison, one not, in a game Ender knows is rigged to kill him regardless of his choice. After dying twice, Ender refuses to play by the rules. Instead of drinking either liquid, he attacks the giant, burrowing into its eye until it falls dead. The landscape then transforms into Fairyland, a new realm of challenges. This solution disturbs Ender. I'm a murderer, even when I play. Peter would be proud of me. It also alarms the teachers monitoring his progress, who note that no previous student has ever killed the giant. They either kept dying or quit playing. Ender's violent solution reveals both his refusal to accept no-win scenarios and his deep fear of his own capacity for brutality. As the game progresses, Ender encounters a playground where he's smaller than other children who transform into wolves and devour him. On his next attempt, he tricks them into following him through a slide, turning them into wolves he can drag into a brook that dissolves them. This sequence mirrors Ender's real-life experiences of being targeted by older students and finding clever ways to defeat them. The game's most significant element appears when Ender reaches the end of the world, where he repeatedly encounters his own reflection transforming into his brother Peter's face. No matter what Ender tries, this scenario always ends with his death, reflecting his inability to reconcile his fear of becoming like Peter. The mind game's true purpose is revealed only after Ender has unknowingly won the real war against the buggers. The game wasn't merely analyzing him. It was being influenced by the buggers themselves, who had found Ender through the Ansible, faster-than-light communication, and were learning about him through his dreams. They used the game to communicate with him, building a physical version of the game's landscape on their colony world as a message only Ender would understand. When Ender discovers this landscape years later, he finds behind the mirror not Peter's face, but a Queen Bugger's cocoon, the last hope of their species. Through telepathic connection, Ender experiences the Hive Queen's memories and understands that the Buggers had been trying to communicate, to show they understood their mistake in attacking humans and sought forgiveness. The mind game thus serves as both psychological assessment and alien communication device, a bridge between species that ultimately fails to prevent tragedy but offers hope for redemption. By making the virtual landscape real, the Buggers demonstrate that understanding across vast differences is possible, even if it comes too late to prevent destruction.
We're the Wicked Witch. We promised gingerbread, but we eat the little bastards alive. This chilling statement from one of Ender's teachers encapsulates the moral ambiguity at the heart of the novel. Throughout Ender's training, the military systematically manipulates his reality, withholding crucial information and engineering situations to shape him into the commander they need. The most profound deception comes at command school, where Ender believes he's playing increasingly difficult battle simulations against computer opponents. His mentor, Mazer Rackham, hero of the previous Bugger War, pushes him to exhaustion, forcing him to command simulated fleets against overwhelming odds. What Ender doesn't know is that these simulations are actually real battles, with Ender's commands being transmitted across space to human fleets attacking Bugger worlds. In the final simulation, facing impossible odds, Ender abandons conventional tactics. With his fleet nearly destroyed, he directs his remaining ships to dive toward the Bugger homeworld itself, targeting it with the Little Doctor device, a weapon that disrupts molecular bonds, creating a chain reaction. The planet explodes completely, destroying the entire enemy fleet. Only after the room erupts in celebration does Mazer reveal the devastating truth. For the past few months, you have been the battle commander of our fleets. This was the third invasion. There were no games. The battles were real. Ender has unwittingly committed xenocide, destroying the Bugger homeworld and all their queens. Horrified, Ender retreats to his room. When Graf and Rackham later try to explain, he erupts in anger. "I didn't want to kill them all. You bastards, you wanted Peter, but you made me do it. You tricked me." They admit the deception was necessary. They needed someone with enough empathy to understand the enemy, but who wouldn't hesitate to destroy them. You had to be a weapon hender, like a gun, functioning perfectly, but not knowing what you were aimed at. This manipulation extends beyond the final battle. Throughout Ender's training, the teachers deliberately isolate him, create unfair challenges, and withhold crucial information, including the deaths of Stilson and Bonzo. Even Valentine is weaponized against him, brought to Earth specifically to convince him to continue his training when he begins to resist. The novel presents this manipulation as both necessary and morally reprehensible. Humanity survives because of these deceptions, yet they come at tremendous cost to Ender's psychological well-being. The teachers justify their actions through utilitarian logic. The survival of humanity outweighs the suffering of one child. But the novel never fully endorses this calculation. Instead, Card presents the manipulation of truth as a tragedy that damages both the manipulators and their target. Graf, who orchestrates much of Ender's training, admits his guilt. "I think we're going to screw him up." By the novel's end, he has lost weight and seems haunted by his actions, despite being acquitted of charges related to his treatment of Ender. The manipulation of truth ultimately becomes the novel's most disturbing theme, raising questions about whether ends truly justify means and whether victory achieved through deception can ever be morally clean.
The novel's final section offers a path toward redemption through radical empathy. After destroying the bugger homeworld, Ender discovers he has unwittingly become humanity's greatest hero, celebrated for a genocide he never intended to commit. Rather than returning to Earth, he joins the first human colony on a former bugger world, serving as its governor while Valentine writes a history of the bugger wars. Years later, exploring potential sites for new settlements, Ender recognizes a landscape identical to one from his battle school fantasy game, the Giant's Corpse, with its skull-like rock formation. Discovering an artificial playground nearby, he realizes the buggers built this place specifically for him, recreating scenes from the mind game he played as a child. Inside a tower from the game, Ender finds a queen bugger's cocoon, the last hope of their species. Through telepathic connection, he experiences the hive queen's memories and understands that the buggers had found him through the Ansible, learning about him through his dreams while he unwittingly destroyed them. They had built this place as their only means to communicate, to show they understood their mistake and sought forgiveness. This revelation transforms Ender's understanding of the conflict. The buggers hadn't understood that humans were individually sentient. To them, killing humans was like cutting off a limb, not murdering a person. By the time they realized their mistake, it was too late. Ender takes the queen's cocoon, promising to find a safe world where she can awaken and rebuild her species. He writes her story from her perspective, signing it Speaker for the Dead rather than using his name. This book spreads across human worlds, inspiring a movement where speakers would tell the complete truth about the dead, hiding no faults and pretending no virtues. For many colonists, it becomes their only religion, though no one knows Ender is the original speaker. When Peter Wiggin, now an elderly hegemon, asks Ender to speak for him too, Ender writes The Hegemon, which together with The Hive Queen becomes Holy Writ. These books represent Ender's attempt to understand those he once feared or hated, the buggers who threatened humanity, and the brother who tormented him. The novel ends with Ender and Valentine traveling from world to world, she as a historian, he as an itinerant speaker for the dead, always carrying the queen's cocoon, searching for a world where she can awaken in peace. This quest for a safe haven for the species he nearly destroyed becomes Ender's atonement. This conclusion offers a profound message. True understanding requires seeing from another's perspective, even when that perspective seems alien or threatening. By becoming the voice of both the buggers and his brother, Ender transcends the violence of his past through radical empathy, suggesting that the path to peace lies not in victory, but in comprehension. In the moment when I truly understand my enemy, understand him well enough to defeat him, Ender explained earlier in the novel, then in that very moment, I also love him. The tragedy is that this understanding often comes too late to prevent destruction. The hope is that through speaking for the dead, through telling their stories truthfully, we might learn to understand before we destroy.